produced and distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. This is your daily audio stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Daily Audio Stash is where responsible marijuana smokers listen in on the latest news about cannabis, hear the voices of the marijuana law reform movement in special segments and interviews, and kick back with comedy and music no other podcast can offer. It's Normal's Daily Audio Stash. More information at normalaudiostash.com.
Of Americans no longer support arresting and jailing marijuana smokers, and nearly as many support the medical patients having access to medical marijuana, and over 80% of our citizens now believe the war on drugs is an ineffective failure. So the question is, when will the government's misguided war on adult marijuana smokers finally end? When? Simple. When you and your like-minded friends, family, and coworkers get involved with an organization such as the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws, also known as NORML. My name is Keith Stropp, and I founded the organization in 1970. Contact us at NORML, toll-free, 888-67-NORML, or by visiting the organization's up-to-date webpage at www.normal.org.
Breaking news today from the NORML Foundation in Washington, D.C. 12-year study finds teen marijuana use, quote, not a gateway, close quote. Investigators at the University of Pittsburgh Medical Center announced today that cannabis use by young people does not predict later illicit drug use. Quote, the study's findings call into question the long-held belief that has shaped prevention efforts and governmental policy for six decades and caused many a parent to panic upon discovering a bag of pot in their child's bedroom. Close quote, the university stated in a press release. The Pitt researchers tracked 214 boys beginning at ages 10 to 12 for a period of up to 12 years, all of whom eventually used either legal or illegal drugs. When the boys reached age 22, they were categorized into three groups: those who used only alcohol or tobacco, those who started with alcohol and tobacco, then used marijuana in a gateway sequence, and those who used marijuana prior to alcohol or tobacco in a reverse sequence. Nearly a quarter of the study population who used both legal and illegal drugs at some point, 28 boys, exhibited the reverse pattern of using marijuana prior to alcohol or tobacco. And those individuals were no more likely to develop a substance use disorder than those who followed the traditional succession of alcohol and tobacco before illegal drugs, according to the study, which appears in this month's issue of the American Journal of Psychiatry. We'll have an extended news story and conversation with Dr. Mitch Earlywine about this important new data on Wednesday's Audio Stash. And now our regular daily news. Our news today. Maine towns moving to deprioritize marijuana. The Maine Marijuana Policy Initiative is moving forward in its campaign to make marijuana offenses the lowest law enforcement priority in small towns across western Maine. MMPI has submitted petitions to officials in five towns, calling for marijuana possession and use to be put low on the priority list of local police. Next year, voters in the Oxford County town of Sumner will vote on a local ordinance that would make adult marijuana-related offenses the, quote, lowest law enforcement priority, close quote, in town. A similar proposal could be considered at annual town meetings in Farmington, Paris, West Paris, and Athens, where petitions have been delivered to local officials. Jonathan Levitt, executive director of the nonprofit Maine Marijuana Policy Initiative, said the strategy is to get the ordinance passed in several small towns before moving on to larger communities. Farmington Town Manager Richard Davis said he is seeking a legal ruling from the Maine Municipal Association to see how the proposed ordinance squares with state law. Levitt, who lives in Sumner, Maine, and is a Green Party activist, said the ordinance would prohibit communities from accepting state or federal funds that would go toward the enforcement of marijuana laws. It would also require police to submit reports on the number and type of marijuana arrests to each municipality that adopts the ordinance, he said. Furthermore, it would require municipalities to notify state and federal officials that they have deprioritized adult marijuana crimes and to request that the federal and state governments take steps to legally tax and regulate marijuana use, cultivation, and distribution. Levitt presented a petition on Monday to the Sumner Selectmen, who then passed a motion to include the ordinance on the August town meeting warrant. MMPI is funded through grant money from the National Marijuana Policy Project, as well as local donations.
$755,000. That is a big number to be sure, but do you know what this number represents? It signifies the total number of citizens in America arrested on marijuana charges in 2004. That's right, 755,000 of your fellow citizens were arrested on marijuana charges. That's an arrest every 40 seconds, and 9 out of 10 of those arrested are for possession-only charges. Does continuing marijuana prohibition make sense to you? It certainly does not to the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws and its members. I'm Normal's Executive Director, Alan St. Pierre, and if you too think that it is high time to end marijuana prohibition and replace it with a tax and regulate policy, please join and support Normal's 36-year legislative efforts to reform our country's misguided marijuana laws. You can learn more about Normal or become an active supporter by calling toll-free 888-67-NORMAL, N-O-R-M-L, or by visiting us on the web at normal, N-O-R-M-L.org.
Welcome back to the Audio Stash. Today, I'm your host, Chris Goldstein. Take a moment to join us at Normal to end marijuana prohibition in America. Just visit normal.org. Today on the Audio Stash, we're featuring an interview with Law Enforcement Against Prohibition's Howard Wooldridge. Howard is based in Washington, D.C., and we'll talk with him about his efforts on Capitol Hill. Also, later on today, we'll have music and comedy found up at podshow.com. And check out the brand new look for Normal's Audio Stash Archive. Just visit normalaudiostash.com and click on the archive links to visit a categorized archive of all of our programs. The effort to reform marijuana laws and end senseless pot prohibition often pits reform activists against local law enforcement, but that isn't always the case. LEAP, or Law Enforcement Against Prohibition, has thousands of members who are current or former law enforcement personnel. From local cops to DEA and customs agents to FBI investigators, the members of LEAP come from all walks of American law enforcement personnel. One of the most visible LEAP members inside the Beltway is Howard Wooldridge, an education outreach specialist with LEAP who's now based in Washington to help keep the issue alive among congresspeople and their staffers. LEAP members are some of the most effective public speakers and lobbyists because of their direct involvement with law enforcement. They've done the actual arresting and are now advocating for serious reform. Mr. Wooldridge joins us today from Washington. Howard, welcome to Normal's Daily Audio Stash today.
Thank you. Good to be here, Chris.
Wonderful to speak with you today, Howard, and thanks again for taking time to join us. First, tell us about your law enforcement background and how you got involved with LEAP.
Well, I was 18 years a police officer in the mid-Michigan area, retiring as a detective, and went down to Texas, where I became involved in the drug reform movement, first with the Drug Policy Forum of Texas, and became their first speaker. They realized the power of a police officer was going to be greater as we bring credibility to the issue. And I began speaking out both in English and Spanish back in 1999. Fast forward to a year ago, I finished riding my horse across America for the second time with that T-shirt said, "Cops say legalize drugs, ask me why," and went to Washington to seek my fortune. And very fortunately, I'm now representing LEAP on Capitol Hill as an education specialist. I'm not quite a lobbyist.
And do you think that being from a law enforcement career that congressional staffers take the LEAP message to heart?
Well, yes, in the sense they know that I've worn a badge and a gun, I've arrested bad guys. When I look into their eyes and say, look, I want to chase child molesters and not Rush Limbaugh, they know I've arrested child molesters. And I think it does bring a little bit of extra oomph to the issue. And also, because they have so much of drug reform is tied intimately with law enforcement, when they have a question about something involving law enforcement, like, well, what about driving under the influence and how would you handle this or that, I can come back with a ready answer because I've arrested literally thousands of people, and both for drunk driving or whatever else.
Howard, when you were on active duty law enforcement, what kind of marijuana smokers did you encounter as a cop?
Well, mostly just average, 18 to 30-year-olds. I'd stop somebody for running a red light and ask for their registration and proof of insurance. I'd open the glove box, and there's a bag of green stuff. And what I did every time, because I was interested in people running the red light drunk driving or reckless driving, I simply took the baggie of marijuana, dumped it out in the street, wrote them a ticket for the red light, and kept on going. I wasn't going to waste an extra, 30 minutes or 45 minutes to, process the evidence, arrest them for the marijuana, et cetera, simply because it had nothing to do with public safety. And I was lucky that my department gave me the discretion on minor marijuana cases to simply dump it and then go after the drunk driver, as opposed to, as I say, take the time to process a marijuana bust.
So there is that discretion given by some local departments when it comes to minor marijuana offenders.
Well, actually, I believe that's not quite as true as it used to be, Chris. We saw the case in New Jersey last year where the sergeant was actually forced to resign because he did not take action on a mother and a daughter smoking marijuana. I believe today there is less discretion, and that's reflected in the fact that last year, as you know, a record number of Willie Nelsons were arrested for simple possession of marijuana, defined as basically 1 ounce or less. So my profession, unfortunately, is still increasing the number of marijuana arrests in this country, which means that for millions of hours per year, they're out of service, unable to handle a 911 call when there's a true public safety emergency.
Howard, can we see that play out where law enforcement entities that have a lot of violent crime to deal with are losing out on protecting their communities due to prohibition enforcement?
Oh, sure. One of the most effective arguments I make on Capitol Hill is the Rush Limbaugh situation. My colleagues spent hundreds of hours proving that Mr. Limbaugh was doctor shopping for his OxyContin, and they finally did prove it. But I asked the question, how many child predators were not caught because my profession was doing that, as opposed to going online and sniffing out these men who would rape our little boys and girls? How many rapists were not caught because those detectives were not staking out a jogging path or a bicycle path where that sort of criminality occurs? And, of course, Willie Nelson got busted. I say the same thing. How many people were not arrested for drunk driving last year and then went on to kill people because we arrested a record number of people for simple possession, not DUID, simple possession of marijuana?
Howard, you were a detective, and that's about solving crimes. How much time does it take to solve property or violent crimes?
Well, it certainly takes a great deal of time and a great deal of effort, and of course, that's what we should be focusing on, are the violent crimes where there's a true suspect and a true victim. And unfortunately, we are bogged down. As I said, about 75% of my felony caseload touched drug prohibition. Now, in my particular jurisdiction, that almost exclusively was theft, mostly home burglaries, car theft, larceny of bicycles, etc., done by drug addicts who need the money. But I had to investigate all those cases. Now, in a larger city where you have the homicides, drug dealer shooting drug dealer, again, it takes huge amounts of money and police time, and it detracts from our ability to go after the lesser crimes and lesser defined as rape. I mean, this so dramatically reduces public safety. One of my primary goals, and that of LEAP, is to educate the public about how much their safety is lessened by the fact we're going after all these nonviolent drug offenders.
Howard, I'm often mentioning that marijuana legalization and deprioritization really are things that are pro-law enforcement. This type of reform isn't going to mean less police officers out there.
I agree. I think, of course, the only caveat that is corrections officers will lose their jobs. We can easily close half the prisons in this country a few years after this policy ends, and corrections officers will be forced to find other employment. But regular police officers should not lose their job as we focus again on the deadly threat of the DUI. Go online, find those child predators. And, of course, at the federal level, my colleagues should be focusing on people flying airplanes into buildings, not the medical marijuana gardens out in California.
Also, couching this argument in the current atmosphere of increased national security efforts, prohibition is really holding us back in this regard.
Well, it certainly is detracting from our public safety. I know some friends of mine were saying after 9/11 that, well, now they'll have to legalize, regulate, and tax marijuana because we have a greater threat to the nation, and they were hopelessly naive. Of course, my research and my analysis shows this thing with marijuana prohibition hinges, of course, totally on money, first, second, third, in that marijuana is feared by the pharmaceuticals as an effective drug. We all know God didn't make no junk. It is medicine, low cost, low side effect, highly effective. And I also believe that the alcohol industry fears marijuana because it would be a competitive buzz, competing with Jack Daniels and white wine. This whole thing is unfortunately hinging so much on the money. And as you know, all I've got is a good-looking one-eyed horse.
Howard, let's talk about those money aspects further. This is what America is all about, the dollar. And there is this reality that medical marijuana patients often wean themselves off dozens of expensive pharmaceuticals they were previously assigned for their treatment. And in Colorado this year, over 500,000 people cast a vote that marijuana is safer than alcohol. But is there any way that those interests can have a soft landing financially with an end to marijuana prohibition?
No, my analysis is no. There's no soft landing. The drug companies will have to take a hit of several billions of dollars when cannabis is legalized for medicinal use. The whiskey companies, the wine companies will have to take a couple $100 million hit each year when users from time to time switch from a white wine to cannabis at 6 o'clock in the afternoon. There's no way to lower it because, you know, drug companies are geared to making pills, not using or marketing a leafy material. So, but, you know, they're making plenty of good money now, thank you very much, and they're just going to have to suck it up and go. There's no way, and of course, you know, there's no way for anyone in drug reform to compete with those two industries which have essentially more money than God. So it's going to take rational argument, and as I go to Capitol Hill 3 and 4 times a week to talk to staffers and the actual congressmen, that's what I emphasize, of course, is the severe reduction in public safety as we chase the Willie Nelsons as opposed to drunk drivers.
And Howard, tell us a little bit about your experience working on Capitol Hill there in D.C. Do you run into alcohol and pharmaceutical lobbyists as well?
Well, no, they don't put a D on their jacket or a big A for alcohol or anything like that. But I'm confident, on the other hand, that so far I'm the only lobbyist. I'm the only person up there that's wearing a cowboy hat, and it's an excellent marketing tool. I'm the only person that's representing something like that in that particular mode, and everybody recognizes me now after only one visit. So I think after a while, you know, this will continue to be a fantastic exposure because this happened when I was a true lobbyist for Texas Normal in 2003. I was wearing that cowboy hat and the big buckle, and pretty soon, and I was, as they say, working for Normal, I was known as Marijuana Man. Nobody knew my real name. But they would look out in the cafeteria, see that hat, and think, oh, that guy wants to legalize, regulate, tax marijuana. And so with that type of very cheap marketing, I hope to be expanding my influence and my impact on Capitol Hill as people now look out across the cafeteria in the Longworth building and say, oh, there's that guy, there's that cop that wants to legalize drugs. And again, it's just a daily little reminder. And as I stay here, hopefully for years and years, it'll be a cumulative impact of as a witness a law enforcement witness to the failure of our drug prohibition approach.
Just last week, the Bureau of Justice Statistics released data showing America's prison population has again grown to record proportions. And the BJS pointed out themselves that the increase in federal prison is in direct relation to drug prohibition. You know, when you speak with reps and their staffers, is there any fear among them that they're locking up too many of our own citizens?
The simple answer is no. I've spoken to about 300 Rotaries and Kiwanis clubs across America, some 9,000 people live. A lot of them don't care about the cost. They don't care about the human cost. They don't care about the taxpayer cost. Their thing in life is that anything that will keep drugs and drug dealers away from my kids, I'll pay the price. And I'll let other, you know, black and brown people of color go to jail. I really don't care. That's their overriding concern. And that's why I and LEAP members, when we speak to organizations, address that concern directly of how legalizing, regulating will make it a better, safer world for your 15, 16-year-old. So, no, the only time that comes into play, my experience, is when states run out of money. You know, the feds can always, you know, borrow more money, which they do. States have to live within their budget, and the state government, in Texas in particular, came out last week. Senator Whitmire, the head of the Senate Criminal Justice Committee, said, we shall not build more prisons in Texas. We will change law. And that's exactly what happened in 2003 when they had the first state passed through the legislature, treatment versus incarceration. So it's the states who are running out of money, and they're the ones who are scrambling to try to find new ways to not build more prisons.
And how much does the private prison industry work against the idea that we want to build less prisons out there?
We cannot compete with the Wackenhuts and the Corrections Corporations of America, but certainly money talks in this town. And they spread it around thick, just like the pharmaceutical industry does and the alcohol company does. And, boy, all I can do is write up on Misty, with my hat on.
And, Howard, how can folks who aren't located in Washington, D.C. affect some change on this issue of prohibition?
What's important for your listeners is make the telephone ring at the offices of your state legislative representatives and your congressmen and U.S. senators. Make the phone ring is the fastest way to get this policy changed.
Howard, this has been a great conversation. I appreciate you joining us today, and I really look forward to speaking with you again about your efforts there in D.C.
My pleasure, Chris.
Howard Wooldridge is an educational outreach specialist for law enforcement against prohibition. LEAP can be found online at leap.cc, and we have links at normalaudiostash.com.
Hi, this is Willie Nelson from Normal. For 30 years, Normal has provided a voice for the millions of Americans who smoke marijuana responsibly. More than 500,000 Americans are arrested each year for smoking pot. These are ordinary citizens like you and me whose lives and careers are being needlessly destroyed. To learn how you can help, contact Normal at www.norml.org or call toll-free at 888-67-NORML.
Hey, is it 420 yet? This is Rick Cusick from High Times Magazine, and you're tuned into Normal's Audio Stash.
Let's do something good tonight.
Whether on a train, plane, ferry, or automobile, these days I'm never far removed from listening to Normal's daily Audio Stash and weekly news on my computer or iPod. Where else in the world can folks listen to up-to-date information produced specifically for cannabis consumers? This is Normal's Executive Director, Alan St. Pierre, and Normal is growing the truth about cannabis, and the harvest is yours to reap. Tune in every day at 4:20 p.m. for your daily Audio Stash. Get hooked up with Normal's daily and weekly news podcast by visiting norml.org or normalaudiostash.com.
We got some great music found for you up at podshow.com. We're going to start things off with this track by a group called Pain, P-A-I-N. Here's the tune, Let Me Grow More Weed with Howard Marks.
A thousand million years ago, nature said let it grow, grow more weed. I've got no race problem, I've got no age problem, I've got no problems when I'm stoned, so I'll grow more.
That was a group called Pain, P-A-I-N, with that track, Let Me Grow More Weed, with Howard Marks. We have links to all of the artists we play on the show at normalaudiostash.com. This has been Normal's Daily Audio Stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Thanks to podshow.com for all the great pod-safe music. We feature the band Carne Cruda as our theme. Make sure you visit our website at normalaudiostash.com. That's normalaudiostash.com for more information about every day's show. Thanks to Red Aphid Interactive Media for the podcasting technology. We're back at 4:20 tomorrow. If you listen to the Audio Stash, cast your vote at Podcast Alley or other podcast directory services. I'm your host, Chris Goldstein. Thanks for listening today. See you at 420 tomorrow. The podcasting technology of Normal is made possible by Red Aphid Interactive Media. More information at redaphid.com.